Am I the only one that found out about Sir Mix-a-Lot from Shrek?
What? No. Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm like, truthfully, just because I came in at an odd time in my life, yes, where I was either listening to what my parents were listening to or what my siblings were listening to. And between the DMX and like 98 Degrees and whatever was going on with my parents, which was Olivia Newton-John, Andrew Lloyd Webber, and I don't know, Enya.
Yep.
There was a lot of music that there was this weird gap that I wasn't exposed to. So occasionally movies would come out and they'd be like, oh, here's current songs, or here's like popular songs throughout history. It's like, I've never heard these before in my life.
Wild.
Yeah.
All right.
Like Smash Mouth. I didn't know about them until Shrek. Actually, yeah, that really did kick off a lot of my musical interests.
Oh, Paul.
Welcome to Eat A Fix, a podcast about a couple hyperfixating on obscure pop culture. I'm your co-host, Paul Unger.
And I'm your co-host, Jess Unger.
And yeah, I really need to expand my musical horizons.
I'm working on that.
Right now, it's just lo-fi video game tunes, and that's just everything that consumes my free moments. That and podcasts. Like other podcasts, not this podcast.
See, and I'm having a hard time getting back into my old ones, and that makes me really upset because other things want to push their way into my brain.
I find it, there's a few that I've been enjoying. I had to take a break from my splurging on true crime stuff just because.
Me too.
The past year has been rough for listening to real life horrible events.
Yeah.
There's already just too much of that in the news, but I do still really enjoy horror podcasts.
That's different, though. That's almost like intangible. Oh, that could absolutely never happen to me. It's way too outlandish. Yeah. There's some separation there.
Yeah, you gotta love the spooky stuff.
Exactly. Okay, so welcome to Everyday Tangents. That was one of them.
So this episode is going to be a little bit different because we are not covering the movies we are planning to, because we need to do more research.
We made an attempt, and just to be safe, we're not going to put it up because the subject matter is extremely sensitive. It involves race, and we are absolutely not qualified to discuss any of that. So we're probably going to do a little bit more research or find a way, an alternative way to discuss it, and then we'll get back to it. So for now, we're just going to kind of ramble on and have Paul tell us the harrowing story about being diagnosed with ADHD later on in life.
At the ripe age of 28. But before we get into that.
Yeah.
Jess.
Yeah.
What's been interesting to you lately? What are you fixated on?
Old, old sitcoms.
Yeah. So you want to tell the listeners at home the journey you've been on?
Okay, so very recently, Ed Asner passed away, and this is extraordinarily unfortunate. He is very near and dear to our hearts. He is, to us at least, the OG J. Jonah Jameson. He played Santa in a few iterations. He was in Up. He's a very beloved character. But he was, first and foremost, Lou Grant from the Mary Tyler Moore Show. And I had watched bits and pieces of that in my youth. And for whatever reason, because I'd posted on the Instagram, Ed Asner was in two movies with Elvis.
Which I was surprised about.
Yeah. He actually got his film debut in Kid Galahad as a lawyer.
Weird.
And I don't remember that, but I only watched Kid Galahad once because I hate it. We'll get to that when we get to that. And his next one was Change of Habit, which coincidentally also starred Mary Tyler Moore.
Oh.
So when Ed Asner passed away, something in my brain clicked and told me, you need to go watch Mary Tyler Moore. So went on YouTube and it was extremely easy to find. I could find all 7 seasons. I binged the life out of all of those seasons, and then I moved on to the spinoffs, and now I'm almost done Rhoda.
There was way more spinoffs of that show than I thought.
3 of them.
So Rhoda.
Yep, which is Rhoda Morgenstern's. There's also Phyllis, which is Phyllis Lindstrom, who's super annoying. I love Cloris Leachman. Don't get me wrong. I love Cloris Leachman, but I could not stand her character in Mary Tyler Moore, and I will not go visit that particular show. I just can't. And then Lou Grant had his own. And that one, I tried a couple episodes, and it is not funny. It is like hard-boiled Columbo stuff of like hard journalism and newspaper article writing and what it's like being an editor for a newspaper and getting those stories and the danger that the reporters get into. It's intense. So I kind of put that away for a bit because I'm into lighthearted right now.
Yeah.
And I'm coming to the end of Rhoda as it is. And when I'm done that, I don't know what my life is going to be.
I mean, there's other comedies in that era, but that era had a lot more spinoffs than I remember. Like, there's some shows that had spinoffs of spinoffs, and it's really hard to keep track of.
Happy Days.
Yes, that one is one that splinters off way more than I thought.
Because I think Joni Loves Chachi was like a spinoff of a spinoff. I might be wrong. Correct us if we're wrong. Leave comments.
Like, I knew when I was younger that Cheers spun off into Frasier.
Yep.
And I knew that there was the TGIF cinematic universe of shows that were technically all attached. But that was about it. That was where my knowledge ended. You have shown me more of these older shows and the spinoffs attached to them. And I feel like it's going to get into like the spider web with yarn attached to different like tack boards. Very conspiratorial.
That Charlie like, Day meme. Yeah,
trying to track down where all these shows originate from. Like if there's one like lead show that all shows have spun off from.
Oh gosh, it's like 6 degrees from Kevin Bacon, except show spin-offs.
I feel like it's a much bigger deal nowadays. Like there was the Young Sheldon spinoff that was happening, and then there was supposed to be a How I Met Your Mother or a How I Met Your Father show that was supposed to spin off, which was dead, then it was alive, and then we saw the finale and we stopped caring.
Yeah. I can't talk about that. It makes me
mad. Yeah. And then Game of Thrones is supposed to have like I guess they're considered spinoff. It feels weird saying that for a show. I don't know.
That epic, you feel like, oh, spinoff is like from some
yeah, it sounds zany like sitcom-y.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, there's a few that are in development there, but again, after their finale, I don't know how many people actually care.
Well, that's just it. And it's very rare to actually see a spinoff that actually does well and is good and isn't stupid and boring. Frasier is one of them. Oh, that did so well. Rhoda was amazing. Apparently Phyllis is good. I don't know. I'm just going to trust my mom on that one. Lou Grant, I actually don't know how well that one did. It's so far removed from Mary Tyler Moore. You can barely put them together. If you had split them off, you would never know.
But then you have other ones that apparently they were well received back in the day, like Trapper John MD. Like,
oh, I don't understand that.
We're both fans of MASH. So when we found out that there was a spinoff, we were excited to go track it down. But it is nothing like MASH.
I did not enjoy what I saw of it. And my mom called me crazy because she also really enjoyed it. I found there was a severe disconnect for me because it's not the same actor.
No. I think that there are some cameos, but I can't really remember. When we tried watching those few episodes, I went through Wikipedia and IMDb, as I do, to like learn all the details about it. But I actually petered out, and I don't think any of that really got saved to memory.
No, and that's fair. I don't know. I couldn't tolerate it enough to continue with it, personally, anyway. So yeah, that's the journey I've been on. How about yourself? You actually had an accomplishment there.
Yeah. So last time I was talking about Fallout New Vegas.
Yes.
And I finished up Fallout New Vegas,
yay!
Which was such a big feat because I had played that game a few times. And with any open world game, I eventually get a sort of fatigue with it.
You do. Yep.
And unless there's some sort of novelty of going around in the world, like I know with Metal Gear Solid 5, I can play that forever.
Oh, man, I can watch you play that forever.
Just because it's mission-based, you have the same world, but it changes up what you're doing in it.
Mm-hmm.
But with Fallout, there's just so much to do, it's really hard to stick with it to the ending. This one, I actually went in and had this personality I gave to my character, and I abided by this is what my character would do, which I would hate in a D&D game of someone saying that, but this character that I instilled in there kind of kept me going because they wanted to find out who shot him in the head and were pissed off about everything else along the way.
Wonderful.
And I went from that into watching Oxhorn's videos about all the different vaults throughout Fallout's universe.
Yes.
Because in this game, vault tech is awful and create all these bomb shelters as social experiments where yeah. either they're all populated by, you know, one guy named Gary or only had one inhabitant with a box of puppets.
Yeah.
Or gain much more nefarious, like using them as a petri dish to test viruses on with the noble cause of creating a cure-all. But as Sawbones has taught us, cure-alls cure nothing.
Hey, Michael. They're not going to listen to this.
And I guess now I've moved on to crafting.
Yes, and that was another accomplishment that you did. Tell the people what you did.
Okay, so I have been looking at a lot of crafting videos for making dioramas, making models. I've been watching Studson's channel on YouTube. I'll include a link below. And was taking a look at all these great things he was making and kit bashing. And so I started watching other affiliated channels and other channels that were covering the same types of things. And one channel, I can't remember which one, had this notion of a 3D card by taking old Magic the Gathering cards or Pokemon cards and taking a similar card and layering it on top of each other to create a 3D effect. And I saw this, and I have oodles of Magic the Gathering cards and Pokemon cards. Even though I've given a bunch away, I keep on finding other pockets of them. And I'm realizing that each one is like carbon dating itself of every time I got interested in that again and bought myself a new deck.
Oh, no.
So I, which is just like some really big payback for ADHD tax that's coming in. Because I had one pack from the last time I was interested and I gave away half of that, but the box was filled again from another time I found another deck hiding away from the time I was interested in it beforehand. And so I must have filled up that box again. And then I went to go clear out stuff from my parents' place just because I have a bunch of random Legos and stuff like that that I want to give to the kids.
Yeah.
And I found even more boxes from when I was interested in that back in elementary school.
Oh my God. It's a big war of boros.
Oh, yeah. And I just am sure that I'm going to keep on finding more of these cards kicking around. So,
long story short, our table is now full of DBZ cards.
Which, again, is everyone got into
something.
Into the card battling games.
Yes.
And I gambled incorrectly on DBZ, the trading card game.
Yes.
And I came up short by a big shot because I got a like two-player deck. And I never played a game with anyone because nobody wanted to learn the rules.
And that's funny because we have a friend that I told because she was really, really into it. And she still has the bonkers tournament deck. She used to compete.
Oh, yeah.
She used to go and compete and, like, win and stuff. And she was stoked. And then I told her you were ripping them up to make 3D cards. And then she stopped talking.
In fairness, I don't think anyone else is going to play with me within the city limits.
No, so especially not with the plague.
Yeah. Needless to say, I also don't want to learn how to play another card game.
No, because you're very bad at remembering card game rules.
See, here's the thing. I remember how to play Magic the Gathering. I remember how to play Yu-Gi-Oh! And I remember how to play Legend of the Five Rings.
I don't even know what that one is.
Yeah, a really obscure game played by a handful of people in the city. Needless to say, it's actually obscure for me. It's a very popular game everywhere else.
Okay.
I have a deck of that kicking around somewhere.
Of course you do.
Because I have a problem keeping my interest on anything.
Okay, before we continue, some people are going to want to know, if you play Gwent, do you know the rules for Gwent?
I do not know the rules for Gwent, but in the game, I always win.
Witchcraft. Continue.
Obviously. But no, I never fancy a game of Gwent. It's right up there with New Vegas's Caravan. There is a rules for playing this game. It is apparently interesting to learn. I can't be bothered, and I will brute force my way through that game.
Good enough.
But crafting is something I've actually been really interested in for a while. It's just finally having that dopamine rush to want to do it and have the supplies in front of me.
The time.
Yes. So when it finally hit and I took that initiative to say, I'm sitting down here, I'm doing this thing, I don't know how long it's going to take me, I don't even know how to properly do this thing, but I'm doing it. That was nice to be able to see this thing sitting on our dining room table, to actually hold it, to see that piece of work that I actually put some effort into. A lot of my stuff ends up being digital between the game jams or stuff in Photoshop. It doesn't have that tangibility to it.
That's fair.
That not being able to actually see it actively or hold it. I don't know. I've read in a few places that that has a positive effect on you, to be able to see something and
touch it and move it around. Yeah, that's so, why I crochet.
And you crochet like a fiend.
I know.
And I love it so much because I have so many hats.
Hats and licensed merchandise. It is expensive.
Yeah, you've made some pretty cool things.
I know.
We'll post some up on the Instagram.
Oh, okay.
So, we want to talk a little bit about when I was first diagnosed. So,
yes, tell us.
So, we were together at this point, but actually, one of the things that is quite common, and it was actually just explained really well, high school is this perfect prison of keeping you focused on different things. I did very well through high school, but the second I went to post-secondary, that's when a lot of the ADHD traits started to show themselves. The second I stopped having a regulated schedule, of course, I had no notion. The only few people that I had ever interacted with at this point who were diagnosed with ADHD and were taking medication for it were the type of people who have the overactive version of it. There is also the inattentive version, and there's the combined.
Okay.
So these people were usually bouncing off the walls. They were usually pretty crazy. I was rather conservative. I didn't do that type of stuff. I didn't goof around a lot as a kid.
Yeah, I've heard that.
So I didn't fit that stereotype that a lot of people associated with it. And I had that mentality for the longest time. I didn't know anything about it, so I never looked into it. And as things went on, I had trouble keeping on time with things. I had a hard time relegating my own deadlines for projects. I'd wait for the last minute. I'd stop planning for things. It just was the slow devolving of my what I expected was my norm.
Yeah.
And it was really hard. Like, you developed depression, anxiety, just feeling like I didn't know why I was failing at what I was trying to do, or why I wasn't being able to kind of keep up with other people. Mm-hmm. And this kept on going on, and, you know, I'd have moments where I was able to overcome it, and then, or more felt like it, like I was overcoming it. But it would kind of come in waves where I'd be, I guess, riding the dopamine of like, I'm doing good at this and doing really good. And then I get bored and lose interest and stop putting my effort into things. For a while, I actually had this news website I was running with a friend.
Yep.
And why actually, one of the reasons why we met was I roped you in as a writer to cover one of the WoW expansions.
Cataclysm.
Yeah. And for a time, I was really into that. We were doing video content. We were doing articles. We were doing all this coverage. We were getting games coming in. We were getting extra comics coming in. We were getting invited to cons and to event shows. And then just one day that dopamine hit wasn't as strong as I wanted it to be. And that was the death knell of that entire project. I just stopped putting my effort in, and not like it was anyone else that needed to pick up the slack. Like, everyone was kind of looking to me for keeping people on track, and I just stopped doing that.
And that was, I found some of the steam kind of ran out when your partner at the time kind of went off and did his own thing.
Yeah, that also kind of put a negative spin on all that. And
like, we did our best, but just, we couldn't.
Well, also, my heart wasn't in it. It was more like automated. I remember, like, even thinking about my reviews back then, I think, like, everything was just kind of getting, like, middling reviews because I didn't want to write anything too critical or too positive because it just sounded pandering. I got really self-conscious about what I was writing about. Like, I like games, but some games are garbage. It's okay to call out the garbage ones. It's okay to call out the good ones. I know that now. But unmedicated Paul, who never went to therapy, didn't. he was a mopey zoo lion on autopilot. And there's nothing wrong with that. But it took me a long time to actually realize that there was something wrong. Like, I know eventually you were the one who encouraged me to go and look into therapy and talking to someone about, you know, what was going on with me.
Yeah.
And you really put it in a positive light, because up until that point, a lot of the mainstream back then was not, I don't know, it wasn't the type of thing that you were telling people to go and do, or like, not in a good way. Like, if you said, hey, you go to therapy, it had a little bit of a stank on it. Nowadays, when you say that, it means that you love someone. It's like, hey, go the heck to therapy.
Yeah. Well, at the time, it was just, there was a lot of big issues going on, and I could see that you were really struggling, and it was getting to a point where it was like, oh, these are big issues, and any support that I can provide is not going to be enough to fix anything. Like, I can be emotional support, but I don't know how to give you the tools to actually deal with this, which is why I did suggest therapy, because that's what therapists do.
So. Exactly. And you were always supportive through all the highs and lows of everything.
Because you did the same for me.
But when I finally started to go and see people, it started giving me a few more tools to regulate things without actually knowing what was going on. I don't know if that was just innately masking that none of them had picked up on it.
Makes sense.
Or if that was just me fibbing on answering the intake sheets, which, let's be honest, when you take those, you're meeting someone for the first time, being panicked about, hey, I'm going to write out all my darkest fears on this. Yeah, you're going to, first time there, you're not going to be as honest as maybe you want to be.
No.
But eventually, I remember as we get close to the diagnosis, I was doing a job that I had in a financial sector. And of course, it was a job that paid the bills, but I was not interested in it in the slightest. I went in, I punched my numbers, I went home.
Yeah.
Not that it was a bad job. It was not with bad people. I just had no interest for it as much as I tried to. And then I noticed that I was having issues with reading. I was having issues with the numbers. I was having to double and triple check everything because I was not entering things incorrectly. I was reading things incorrectly. I was having trouble reading forms. And it was something that I hadn't really noticed leading up to it, but I was sort of having this problem just with books at home. I was having this piecing stuff together by myself, just mentally, but when it came to the numbers and at work, it got worse. And so I booked an appointment with my GP.
Thinking it was dyslexia.
Yeah. And so I went there and said, hey, I've been noticing that I think I'm dyslexic. And
He went through. He's like, yeah, when did you start noticing this? I'm like, well, probably within maybe the last few months, maybe the last year. Because, of course, it takes forever to go in and see this guy.
Yes.
He went, he's just like, oh, sounds like ADHD. I went, no, no, it's not that. And he's like, okay, go see my neurologist. And so I had to wait for another referral to go see this guy. And it took
a few months.
Yeah, it took a good while where I was just sitting there going like, no, it's not that. But it could be dyslexia, so he might be able to help more than this GP.
Yeah.
So I patiently waited and just kind of found ways to manage with this problem. Like, there's a lot of great resources for people who are suffering from dyslexia. So in my case, I found Open Dyslexia, which is a font which makes all the letters just slightly askew so your brain recognizes each letter separately.
Okay, it forces it to focus on that type thing. Okay.
I don't know all the science behind it, but I remember that there was like browser updates and all this that I could use for it, and it really did help for a time. So I was really, dyslexia in my mind was the winner. Like, maybe I just managed to mask it so great for nearly 3 decades. That was my, I was in so much denial at this point of just being like, no, I'm not dyslexic. Or no, I don't have ADHD. I'm just dyslexic and was too stupid to realize it until now. Oh, that has to be it.
Jeez.
So finally, I went to go see this neurologist, and who was great. And I filled out the form. And at this point, I had a little bit of that first time seeing someone who's going to mess with your mind anxiety off. And I answered the form honestly. And he looked at it and went, okay, it's ADHD. Are you sure?
He's a brain doctor. Of course he's sure.
So he gave me a few more forms. And he's just like, okay, like, answer these as truthfully as possible. And I filled them out. And he looked at me. He's just like, yeah, it's ADHD. I'm like, no. It's dyslexia, not ADHD. So this went back and forth for a little bit until he offered me to write a prescription. And it was at that point I kind of realized where my fear was. That I was, dyslexia is something that I could just say, oh, okay, this is just my own, like, it's something that I can learn to deal with. I can get new fonts. I can, like, find different things to help adapt with it. It's not something that I need to be medicated for. And when he offered to write me a prescription, I kind of froze for a bit, but ultimately took him up on the offer.
Yes.
And I should have asked for a lot more resources because he didn't have a lot to offer at that time. Honestly, his office looked like Dumbledore's in Harry Potter. It was just like stacked to the top in just books and medical texts and like papers everywhere. There's no pamphlet available at that time. And if there was, I wouldn't be able to find it. But he was able to, like, you know, he gave me sort of the rundown of different medications I could take, what I would expect from it, and kind of sent me on my way. Shortly after taking that first dose, that was when I noticed a big change. Not in like, you know, I can see new colors, but more, I didn't realize how much stuff like executive dysfunction, the inability to do a task that's just mildly inconvenient, got in the way of things, of being able to make that active decision to wash the dishes. I know the dishes are dirty. I know they need to be done.
Mm-hmm.
But I need to go get new soap from the pantry. So I'll do it tomorrow. Or it's 3 o'clock now. I mean, I have something else to do. I'll get back to it, you know, another time. I like a prime number. I don't know. The amount of mental gymnastics that I jump through to avoid doing tasks that were just mildly inconvenient but could fix things was maddening.
Yeah.
So it's not like taking medication magically made everything better, but it got me on the track of being more aware of when I could do stuff, which was nice.
Yeah.
And I know that for you, you noticed once that initial medication burst stopped and I just kind of normalized, like after the first few days, like you noticed that a pretty big change still just from like day to day.
Yeah. One of my, and this is going to sound really petty and ridiculous, but one of my biggest issues with you was your forgetfulness and the fact that the cupboard doors in the kitchen were always left open, multiple, all the time. And I never understood why. I just didn't get it. And that was just so infuriating. And then I started noticing, you're closing them when you're done.
Yes.
It was very nice. And you were remembering more. And yeah, you were paying attention to more things, more details. You were remembering better. And yeah, big change.
And nowadays, it seems like there's a lot more resources to find out more about ADHD.
Well, there's a bigger community out there making those resources available. It's normalizing it. It's bringing a lot of awareness. Like, I learned a lot, actually, mind you, pandemic-wise. Just for whatever reason, I got more exposure to it, and I learned a whole lot more. Just to be a little bit more understanding, I figured, we're going to be stuck pretty much in the house, constantly in each other's faces for maybe till we die? I don't know how long this is going to last. So I figured I should probably learn a little bit more, be a better supportive partner about it. Yeah, but I was very surprised at how big and active and loud the community is and how great the awareness is. It's very, very helpful.
Which is great. And I've definitely learned a lot. And I finally installed TikTok after fighting that forever.
Same.
But there's a really great community on there. There's a great community on Instagram, on Twitter that we've been slowly trying to introduce ourselves into, which has been great. There's a lot of awesome people in there. And I think what I'll try and do is put a few people in the description below of people that we recommend, like, hey, go follow them.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely been a journey. It's still ongoing. I'm not gonna lie. There's still, like, I think I just admitted to myself that, hey, fidget toys are also something that can be helpful. So we just got a bag of those, and I'm trying to figure out which one of those are, like, good with sensory. Like, I'm trying to be more aware of it, of things. It is an odd journey to find myself on.
And here's the thing with this. This is one of those things that I thought I messed up royally on, because you were talking about it, and I know you were looking at them, and I know you were going through decision paralysis trying to figure out which one you wanted. So me, thinking, I'm going to be helpful, I found this variety pack of a bunch of stuff. I'm just going to buy it. I didn't think that that would make the decision paralysis worse, because I literally bought you a box of choices after you couldn't make a choice.
Yeah.
About making.
It just meant that the choice is now sitting on my bedstand. I get to wake up every morning and just look at it.
And it's just, so I'm sorry about that. But I have seen you've been using that.
Yeah, it's like a round spring. I don't know what it is. It's
a spring.
Like a wire phone cord style looking thing.
Yeah, and you kind of always have that kicking around, like flipping that up and down your thumb.
Yeah. So, in the next little bit, we are going to check out if we can properly do Flaming Star and Wild in the Country.
If not, we'll figure out a way around that.
We might just give them a little, like, yay or nay, watch them, and move on. Or we may go into depth. I know down the road, we are going to have some potential spooky content for more into October.
Yes.
And at some point in the future, we will have Ross Watts from ADHD Hive on to talk about Valheim.
Oh.
Which I'm so excited about.
And so far, in terms of spooky season, what we're looking at is possibly, if I can convince you to go through it, do Hilarious House of Frightenstein. That was actually requested.
Oh, I definitely would be up for that.
So we'll do that one. And then we're going to go through some, and I do mean some, of the Exorcist franchise. Not two. We are not touching The Heretic. It is banned. We pretend it does not exist.
We're with Blatty on this one.
Absolutely. Ugh.
So, thank you very much for tuning in and listening to our story, and we'll catch you next time.
And just remember, like what you like, no matter what the mean kids say.
Big thank you to Ethel and the Androids for the use of their song Used to Know You for the intro and the outro. You can find the link to their SoundCloud in the show description, as well as all our links to our social media. And thanks for tuning in and listening to our podcast. If you like the show, be sure to review and subscribe on the podcast platform of your choice.